None of them came to power across Latin America with women's issues on their agendas. None of them did, including reproductive rights. They had to be pushed to advance women's issues.
This is Civios, your source for public affairs research. A podcast from the Humphrey School of Public Affairs at the University of Minnesota.
In this podcast, we are talking with Professor Christina Ewig. Professor Ewig is the faculty director of the Center on Women, Gender, and Public Policy. She specializes in gender, race, and social policy. Today, we'll be talking about her research on reproductive rights in Latin America. Thanks for sharing your research with us today. And I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit about how you became interested in this area of study.
Thanks for having me, first of all. I started studying Latin America as a scholar, as a graduate student in the mid-1990s. But my interest in reproductive rights actually stems back to when I was a high school exchange student to the country of Uruguay, and then later when I was a college exchange student to the country of Costa Rica, where I had was a personal witness of women that desired abortions but were not able to access them, or at least access them legally. So this has always been an interest of mine, but then as a scholar of Latin America, through the 1990s and into the early 2000s even, there was little movement in terms of abortion policy per se. And so I studied other aspects of reproductive rights, including, for example, the forced sterilizations of Peruvian women. But it wasn't until we began to see some policy changes that it seemed like there was actually something there to study.
Can you help us understand the crisis that lack of access to abortion causes?
Well, clandestine abortion, what happens when abortion is illegal, either in all circumstances or in outside a number of few circumstances, is that women still get abortions, but they may have to do so clandestinely. When we look at the Latin American context, 97% of women across the region do not have access to abortion on demand. And this then results in an important class differential in terms of who can access abortion, because if you have means and the economic means, you can then access abortion illegally but under safe circumstances, because you can find doctors or practitioners that are willing to perform abortions. But if you're poor, you face very possible injury or maternal death, and we know that illegal abortion is a leading contributor to maternal mortality in the region.
So we know that there has been a women's movement in Latin America. And so can you tell me a little bit about what the key elements that typically are attributed to abortion reforms, reproductive rights?
Right. We have extensive research, especially in advanced industrialized countries, including Europe, the United States, Australia, and so on, that really points to several key indicators. One is public opinion that's in favor of liberalization of abortion. A secular society, societies where you may use indicators such as church attendance to measure how much people adhere to church teachings. And then there's the importance of a balance between the strength of feminist movements versus the strength of conservative forces, which are often religiously related forces. So if you have positive public opinion, a high degree of secularization, a strong feminist movement, and weak conservative religious forces under left governments, then you are more likely to see liberalization of abortion policy. And this is what we understand from those advanced industrialized countries. When you bring that to the Latin American context, at least according to the research myself and my co-author have conducted of a survey of abortion policies during the left turn in Latin America, meaning that period between about the year 1999, when Hugo Chavez came to power in Venezuela, and about this year, 2018, when Michelle Bachelet left office as president of Chile. That period saw a surge in leftist governments. And often those other factors were in place, but we did not see the same kinds of consistent liberalization as we saw in other parts of the world.
So in your research, you talk about populism being a threat to reproductive rights. With the idea of populism on the rise internationally, we tend to think of populism as aligning right of political center. But what is your definition of populism?
The key characteristic of populism is a charismatic leader that centralizes power in that leader. Usually it's a him. Usually it's a charismatic leader that centralizes power around himself. And that happens left and right. If we survey populism across the globe, it's actually been more successful in Latin America and among leftist, more recently at least, among leftist governments. That's in contrast to what we might call an institutionalized left. So institutionalized lefts consist of strong networks of party followers that has a robust party organization in which you'll see more adherence to political norms and following of rules. The difference being the high degree of institutionalization means different voices within the party do have a say, but it also means that there's more chance for particular proposals to also be blocked because you do have consensus building taking place and norms that may help or hinder a particular policy from moving forward.
Give us some examples of the differences between populist and institutionalist governments in the countries that you researched.
Well, let's start with an institutionalist case. So a positive case in terms of how party institutions operate and in terms of outcome being liberalization of abortion. And that would be Uruguay. So Uruguay has had a strong feminist movement that has advocated for liberalization of that country's abortion policy since 1985, essentially since democratization in that country, and got actually fairly close, but was not able to change legislation to what it desired, which was abortion on demand in the first trimester, until 2007. So, and that followed on the turn to the left in that country in 2004. So you have in that country all the indicators that I mentioned earlier in place. Very positive public opinion, a highly secular country, a historically weak religious forces and conservative forces, a strong feminist movement, and now finally a leftist government comes to power in 2004. And feminists are pushing at this moment for liberalization and put together a fabulous media campaign, including something called Yo Aborté, I aborted, 9,000 testimonials of women from across the country talking about their abortion experience, including 9 ministers of the government. This, along with TV commercials and more, adds up to a really vibrant mobilization in that country. And the proposed legislation written in conjunction with feminist legislators in Uruguay's parliament makes it through both chambers of the Congress only to be vetoed by the sitting president, Tabaré Vázquez. Now, this is an institutionalized party, the broad front that's in power. And what happens then is it doesn't pass at this moment, but the president himself faces punishment for not going with the party rules, which had agreed to be in favor of abortion liberalization. The following election, a new leftist president from the same party is elected, the broad front, and that's Jose Mujica. And we see a similar process take place, some negotiation and some watering down of the policy in the congressional process. But ultimately, you have liberalization and abortion basically on demand in the Uruguayan case. And that's the way in which institutionalized parties work. Following that passage, there's a referendum. Conservative forces try to overturn it, but they're not able to make the 25% signatories necessary. Instead, they gain about 8% of the population signs in opposition to that legislation. And so that legislation stands. So institutionalized systems allow for advancement, but also abilities for opposition to state their case as well. Now, if we contrast that to Ecuador, where you have a populist government under Alianza País, led by then-president Rafael Correa, in 2013, you have a different policy proposal, and that's simply, as I mentioned previously, to extend their existing abortion policy from allowing for abortion not just in case of threat to the mother's life, but also in cases of rape. You have, again, a feminist movement that's quite strong, especially on this particular policy on reproductive rights. They carry out a strong social media campaign, and they make specific links with legislators of the Alianza País Party, women legislators that put forward this legislation. But instead, what happens here is the president calls these legislators treasonous, puts them in front of the ethics committee of the party, and they are suspended. And that much more mild reform, simply allowing for abortion in the case of rape, is essentially put into the closet until perhaps in the future when we no longer see a populist government in place in Ecuador.
So talk about the challenge of a populist government to reproductive rights. How does that play out then?
The difference between the institutionalized political left and the populist political left turned out to be the key reason that we saw divergence in how different left governments in Latin America approached abortion policy. That is, rather than seeing left governments of any kind move forward with abortion liberalization when those other factors that I mentioned were in place, such as favorable public opinion and broadly secular society, in some cases they actually reversed course. So in the case of Nicaragua, for example, in 2006, the Sandinista Party supported rolling back the very long-standing therapeutic abortion that was allowed in that country to a total prohibition. In 2013, we saw elements of the ruling populist party in Ecuador, Alianza País, make moves to try to liberalize abortion in that country on a very minimalist version, and that is simply to add an allowance of abortion in cases of rape. And that was squashed by that populist leader in that country, Rafael Correa. Whereas other more institutionalized leftist parties, for example, the Broad Front in Uruguay, and in the case of most recently in 2017, liberalization of abortion under the left in Chile, we see movement towards liberalization. So the key difference between those two and why it's related to populism and the fact that we see that under populist governments, either stagnation, as in the case of Ecuador, or rolling back of policies in the case of Nicaragua, appears to be two things. One is the fact that populism itself is a style of governance because it centralizes power in one leader. It is averse to pluralist ideas. And it's averse to especially ideas like individual autonomy and bodily autonomy that tend to be the discourse behind reproductive rights. So that's one key reason. The other key reason goes back to those institutional structures that I mentioned before. So, for example, in institutionalized parties, you may not have everybody on board for a particular policy agenda. However, there are channels to use within that party to try to make headway. In a centralized populist party, often those channels don't exist because power is so concentrated in an individual. And there's a lack of norms and rules. So if you have these, a particular agenda within the party, unless you have the ear of the leader, you are very unlikely to make advances.
So the other trend that we're seeing in Latin America is that there are more and more female politicians in office, and one would think that that could translate into an increase of reproductive rights, although we're not seeing that, and I'm wondering if you can explain why that is.
Certainly in the case studies we did, and this research was in part a survey of changes across the region and then some more in-depth case studies of particular countries. The two populist examples that I mentioned, Nicaragua and Ecuador, actually have some of the highest numbers of women in office in their Congress of any country, any of the countries across the region. They're close to 50% in each country in their national congresses. Yet, we don't see advancement in either of those places, and even in the case of Nicaragua, backpedaling. In the other cases where we see advances, such as Uruguay and Chile, there were fewer numbers of elected women in office. So it does raise a conundrum as to why wouldn't we see greater presence of women translate into greater numbers or greater substantive change on issues like reproductive rights that would seem inherently of interest to these groups. And I think there's two reasons. One is the nature of the problem. So you may very well see women of varying ideological even, as well as class and other different positions, come together on what I might say shorthand here to be easier policies. So things like violence against women, it's hard to argue against even if you lean right, even if you're religious. Whereas abortion policy, because it is more divisive, is a harder policy to get people to line up, even if you are women, across party lines. And there are many women that are opposed to abortion liberalization. But the second piece that I think is important is precisely coming back to the point about populism. I think that under institutionalized party systems, you may well see broader patterns of a positive relationship between more women in political office and more liberal reproductive rights legislation. Some of our cross-national quantitative research by other scholars has shown this, but with the big numbers that they're able to do across the globe, I think they don't pick up these other cases in which you have populist leadership that then, I would be guessing, counterbalances and counteracts the effects of high numbers of women in political office in those cases.
The other thing that you point out in your research is that it's shown that populism does threaten reproductive rights, but you also indicate that social movements do matter. So what changes are you seeing as a result of the women's movement in Latin America?
The Latin American women's movement has a really strong and vibrant history. Like any social movement, it's had its ups and downs. Social movements tend to wax and wane in terms of enthusiasm, membership, resources that they have. The emergence of the left in Latin America and the left turn that took place at about the turn of the millennium breathed a bit of fresh air into that movement in that it offered more space for organizing, more hope for getting their agenda through. And the movement was absolutely the number one reason why you see these policies advance. Because leftist parties, none of them came to power across Latin America with women's issues on their agendas. None of them did, including reproductive rights. They had to be pushed to advance women's issues. And it takes women's movements, and often their relationships to women members of Congress and other members of Congress, left-leaning males, or males that are open to issues of women's rights, left or right, to take up their calls. And that's what we saw happen in the Latin American case. The left was reactive to the momentum of the feminist movement.
So, Christina, what direction is your research going to take you next in this area?
Part of the research that I conducted for this study in Ecuador came out of a piece of an ongoing research project in which I'm looking at the relationship between electing more women to office as well as electing more indigenous-identified individuals to national parliaments in Latin America and measuring what difference that does make, whether that makes a difference for substantive policy outcomes. And so I'm interested in the intersection between gender and race on Latin American political agendas as we see greater representation of these groups in the national congresses of the region.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Civios, an initiative of the Humphrey School of Public Affairs at the University of Minnesota. To learn more about this segment, please visit civios.umn.edu.